Okay, first of all, I'd like to say this is a large study that uses both hyperspectral and thermal imagery, and it was conducted with Israeli scientists. Today I'll just focus on hyperspectral imagery for the detection of nitrogen. So potatoes have a high nitrogen and water requirement, and they have a relatively shallow rooting zone. And in Minnesota, they're grown in coarse textured soil, so all these coming together, there's a high vulnerability for nitrate leaching. Now, hyperspectral imagery has the potential to spatially detect nitrogen stress, and different from a point measurement such as a SPAD meter, it can detect the entire field, so the whole spatial landscape. So that's a big positive of the imagery. So with variable rate application and GPS technology, nitrogen use efficiency can be optimized using this. So the overall objective of this study was to evaluate the ability of the canopy and or the canopy level hyperspectral and thermal imagery to detect nitrogen and water stress. But for this talk, for what I'm going to focus on today, what's relevant, the specific objectives are to identify the specific wavelengths or indices that best predict nitrogen stress and examine the effects of variety and growth stage on those. So this is a 2-year field study conducted at the Sand Plain Research Farm in central Minnesota. The soil is a Hubbard loamy sand soil with a very high saturated hydraulic conductivity and a very low organic matter content. So all the nitrogen had to come from fertilizer inputs. Today only the 2000 data will be presented. The experimental setup was a randomized complete block design with a split restriction on randomization, and we had an irrigation treatment and 5 nitrogen treatments, which will be explained more on the next slide. There are 2 varieties as well, Russet Burbank, which is the main variety grown in the U.S., and Alpine Russet, which is a relatively new variety that has good potential. Here are the nitrogen treatments. There was a low nitrogen rate, starter only control, a low nitrogen rate, and then 3 high nitrogen rates. The low nitrogen rate was the post-emergence fertilizer was applied in split applications, as was 2 of the high nitrogen rate. Now these are the same N treatments, I guess, but there's an added surfactant. That's the only difference, and I'm including it because it's part of the data set. And then there's a high nitrogen rate where all the post-emergence fertilizer was applied at once. So the imagery was acquired in the visible and near-infrared wavelengths. There were 63 bands, each having a spectral resolution of 2.39 nanometers, and the spatial resolution was 1 meter, and we had 2 flyovers per season, one at July 1st and the other on August 6th. So this is a picture of the field plots. What the close plot here is the starter only control, and you can kind of see a little bit of lighter color in the canopy, but another thing you see is that there's a full canopy closure. You can't see soil, I mean, if you're looking from the top. And then this is the same plot on August 6th, and you can see there's maybe some areas where soil would be shown in the imagery. And you can see in these other plots, the starter only controls, you can see they're much lighter colored. So petioles were sampled and analyzed for nitrate, and the total leaves were sampled and analyzed for total nitrogen. And this was done because total nitrogen is a good indicator of the relative nitrogen health of the plant, and petiole nitrate is more of a predictor of what's in the week or two ahead on what the plant will do. These measurements are what was compared to the imagery and what I'll be showing later. Tuber yield was also collected, and I'll show that in the next slide. Relative chlorophyll, ground-based reflectance, and LAI were collected but won't be discussed today. Here are the yields, and there was the effects on irrigation and variety were not significant, but there was an effect on nitrogen rate, and there were some trends with the timing, with the split applied having higher yields. So here's the ANOVA table for the tissue samples. I just want to show that nitrogen and variety, as well as the nitrogen by variety interaction, were highly significant in all cases except for the second flyover date for the entire leaf total nitrogen measurement. Here's an image from the July 1st date at 582 nanometers. I just want to show you this so you can see about how many pixels are in each plot. The difference between variety in this case. So this would be one variety, and then this would be another variety, each one a plot. You can also see this is a starter-only control, and then you can't really see any differences between the other three, but I'll show you some of the success we had with using other methods. So going back to the first objective, we want to identify specific wavelengths or indices to best predict nitrogen stress. So we did a correlation with percent reflectance at each wavelength with each tissue sample, total leaf nitrogen and petiole nitrate. So this is an example of percent reflectance at 695 nanometers with total leaf nitrogen. We got an R-squared value of 0.76. So that 0.76 was plotted right here at 695 nanometers. Now this is done at every wavelength, and we got a curve from that. So if you focus on the maroon line, each one of these little gold points is an R-squared value. So R-squared on the y-axis and wavelength on the x-axis. And you can see here Russ at Burbank is the maroon line, total nitrogen for Russ at Burbank is the maroon line, and petiole nitrate is the gold line. There were better correlations with total nitrogen than petiole nitrate, is what I want to point out there. So finding the specific wavelengths that may be able to best predict nitrogen status, I looked at which wavelengths had the best R-squared values. And you can see everywhere in the near-infrared had pretty good, as well as from about 550 to 600 nanometers. And then there's a peak near the red edge there as well. So I used... I kept in mind those wavelengths, and I picked out some vegetation indices that used those wavelengths, and I also used some that had success in previous studies, and then that's what I compared for what I have for you here today. And also the first derivative for each hyperspectral wavelength was also compared. So these indices with the little arrow by them are the ones that performed best in at least one scenario. So for either of the flyover dates, or for either of the varieties, or for either of the tissue samples. So I said I compared the derivative as well. This gold line is the R squared as a function of wavelength. So the same method that I used for the raw reflectance, only for the derivative of the reflectance. And you can see that here in the red edge region, it's a noticeable difference that it's higher R squared value than anywhere along the raw reflectance the curve. So that tells me that the derivative has good potential to be able to predict nitrogen stress, maybe even better than any of the raw reflectance values. So the second objective is to examine the effects of the variety and the growth stage on those wavelengths. And so this is these are the two curves, and keep in mind that this is the R-squared as a function of wavelength, the two curves of Russet Burbank and Alpine Russet. And you can see that Russet Burbank on July 1st has a better R-squared, across all the wavelengths than the Alpine Russet. But I'm looking, what concerns me more is the shape of the line. There's a peak here at 573 nanometers, and this is telling me that if an index is using some wavelengths in the visible region that may not be 573 nanometers, it might not be giving you the best correlation as what is possible from the data that you have. And then this is a comparison between the two flyover dates, and there's three things that are really noticeable here. First, the near-infrared is very low, as well as the reflectance at the 550 nanometer wavelength. And you know, that goes back to exactly what I said on the last slide, that if an index is used in these wavelengths, it might not be as good. But then here in the blue wavelengths, it's a much better correlation than for the first flyover. So this is saying maybe for the later in the season, indices should be incorporating narrower wavelengths to be able to predict nitrogen stress. So here is the R-squared values for all the indices as well as the derivatives, and I only included the ones that perform best in at least one circumstance. So the first thing we'll compare between the two dates. And this, okay, we have the two dates, and then for each variety and for each tissue sample, petiole nitrate and leaf total N. So you look to see which indices performed best for the July 1st date. We have the NDI1, the revised T-carry, and then two of the derivative reflectances. And you look at those down here, and NDI1, T-carry, and the two derivatives, 751 and 761, didn't perform best in any situation. And I forgot to mention that the numbers with the green shadow behind them, they're the highest R squared value for each circumstance here, for one flyover date, variety, and tissue sample. And the next thing I look at is between the varieties. Between the varieties for each tissue sample, there's also a different index that performed the best in every circumstance except for the August 6th flyover for total leaf N. So pretty much I'm just saying that no index or derivative value performs best for every situation, for growth stage or for variety. And it also depends on what tissue sample you're comparing it to. So here is the first derivative at 751 nanometers. This is what had the best R-squared value on the previous slide. And you can see the starter-only control plot is right here. And you can see all the control plots really, really well. They show up in the green. And here is the low nitrogen rate. And you can see there's more red pixels than in here than, you know, maybe here and here. So there's a trend showing there. And then the 270 early, which had the most nitrogen at this July 1st flyover time, is the brightest yellow. So this is it shows the correlation pretty well. So the conclusions are that the best wavelength or index to detect nitrogen stress vary with variety, growth stage, and tissue sample. Also, reflectance is better correlated with leaf total N than petiole nitrate, although petiole nitrate may be a better predictor for what's to come. And the indices formulated from the first derivative have potential to accurately predict nitrogen stress. And I haven't done anything with the indices of these derivative values yet, but that's something that I'm going to be working on in the future. So I'd like to acknowledge BARD, the BARD Fund, and the Minnesota Area 2 Potato Growers for the funding, as well as these individuals for helping with field and lab work. And thank you for attending, and that concludes my presentation. Yes. You asked what's the plan with the thermal imagery? Okay, thermal imagery is specifically, first of all, going to be used to be able to detect the water stress side of the study using the crop water stress index. But then I guess the main overall goal is to use it in conjunction with the hyperspectral imagery to produce one map that shows the trends or the nitrogen and water stress on the same map over a field. So. Yes. Right. I think that would be the best approach for this to be used commercially because the imagery is so expensive. Yes. And from what I'm seeing with the potato, with the study on potatoes, with it varying between growth stage and even varieties, you know, there's several varieties grown. There's a lot of research that's got to be done if this is going to be used commercially. But yeah, to be able to use a sensor that uses those specific wavelengths, I mean, that sensor, you know, it would be best if that sensor could have adjustments on it for growth stage or variety. So, does that answer? Okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep, thank you.